kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I'm dying slowly over here, but I'm alive.
Slowly.
For the time being, I am alive.
Well, then we will enjoy the time we have with you.
No, you won't.
Final episode, maybe? If it is the final one, we're going out with a bang because it's a party cast. We got Purnell here. We got Chris here. We got Tim here. How's everyone doing?
Doing pretty good, honestly. I can't complain.
I'm dying quickly.
Well, damn, and good. It's unfortunate your reviews aren't first.
I'm going to try and make it to the end of this episode, but we'll see.
No promises, right?
Yeah.
So this is like when you're playing a strategy game and you have to decide who on your team you're going to give the last health kit to.
Who gets it tonight?
The bad news is I've already consumed all the antibiotics. So
anybody taking poison damage is pretty much screwed.
Well, Tim rejoined.
Yeah, my computer is mad at me tonight.
What'd you do to it?
I don't know. Maybe it's feeling neglected because I haven't touched it in a few days. Yes, that's all I got.
Gotta get the cold shoulder there. More.
I guess so.
Well, how are you, Tim? How's things going?
Fuck. I guess it's.
Well, damn. Oh,
well, do you need to make kit too? Because we're in trouble here.
Not gonna.
At what speed and velocity? At what velocity are you approaching the end of the mortal coil?
Man, that, it might be helpful to know that, to be honest. What's this?
Okay. Very much would be.
Are we recording? Or are we still in the pre-show?
Oh, no, we're recording.
Okay,
great. Okay, just checking.
Yeah, talking about death.
That's why I asked how you were doing.
Yeah.
Making the small talk at the beginning of the show. Not that I care. I figure we have to have something at the beginning of the show.
I would be so mortified if you did care. Because I would be embarrassed of myself.
Wouldn't be a podcast without some inane chatter.
What's wrong with inane chatter? It's one of the best things about podcasting.
I mean, it's what you live for, right?
It's all that life has worth talking about. If it weren't for inane chatter, just kill me right now.
That's how I think we all feel.
You're damn right. So inane it up. Who likes blue skies?
I
guess. Brown ones are better.
I'm honestly looking forward to the winter coming. I like the snow personally, so I'm looking forward to that happening eventually.
Not against it.
Well, Tim, you can't be against it. You live in Buffalo.
I know. I don't have much of a choice. Though I saw people like in friends in Texas had some snow today, and I have not really seen snow yet, I don't think, which is an interesting twist on,
Well, that Texas. I'm sorry.
That would be why my friend was telling me earlier, because he's down in Louisiana, and he said they were prepping for a hurricane, but Texas had an ice storm.
Jeez.
And I was like, what are you talking about? So that explains it.
Climate change. It's a thing.
Yeah.
Sure as hell is, and I fucking hate it. Woof. Then again, does anyone like it? Don't answer, because if you do, you tell me that you like it, you're a pain in the ass.
Climate change is great. Yay.
Oh, boy. Glad I don't have any kids, because they're fucked. Yeah, that's climate change. Yeah, God, I hate climate change. It's just, And the worst part about that, there's people are like, that's not real. It's always been like this. The weather, this is a natural thing. It happens all the time. It's like, yeah, species have been killed off by it. You want that shit? You want that? You want natural? And we accelerated it. It's not like just because it's natural doesn't mean it should be happening.
True.
People are goofy. People are inanely stupid. And I've just kind of fallen into that trance of acknowledging that they're stupid. It's just where we're at right now. People are
I resemble that.
Speaking of which, please vote. Speaking of which.
Good Lord.
Unless you're stupid, then don't vote. Just keep your ass hold and get really drunk.
Earlier.
Oh, we're going to have fun next week on the show.
Oh, boy.
Oh, God.
Will we? Because we'll be doing the show during the tally, so we won't have an answer.
I don't know if I'll be coherent at that
during
point.
Day one of the tally, for one.
Yeah.
So if anything, it'll be like the hypothetical episode. We can do two records, one episode for if he loses and one episode for if he wins.
Oh, no, we're just going to have the live results as it happens and see how things are going. And hopefully we'll have a happy podcast next week instead of a depressing one, but...
So on the positive, small positive, if it's a depressing podcast, I'll be really drunk, which will make the reviews funny at least. So, I mean, you got that to look forward to. Let's not look forward to it, though, because I want to be drunk, but for better purpose.
So, Pernell, what do you give the game? You know what I give the game? Fucking Count Chocula. That's what I give the game.
Okay, first of all, it'd be Frankenberry.
I was about to say. Well, that depends on how much he likes it, I guess.
That's true. The best rating would be Fruit Brute. Worst rating would be like, you know, Cow Pie. I don't know. Count Cow Pie. There you go. So cross your fingers that your game doesn't get rated Count Cow Pie, because that would be a real shame.
I'm just hoping by next week my copy of NBA 2K19 is done downloading.
What?
I'm re-downloading my entire Switch library to see if it all fits on 1 terabyte, because I just bought one of those cards.
How big is NBA?
It's like 32 gigs, man.
Jeez. Well, that's
huge.
For Switch, that's huge.
I bought it for $2.
No.
Because it's not 2K19 anymore. So, you know, nothing depreciates in value faster than an EA Sports game.
Or a 2K sports game. 2K isn't 2K, EA.
Oh, is 2K not EA? Okay. Nope. That shows you how much I know about sports games.
Yeah. NBA for EA is NBA Live.
Oh, we're learning today.
Yeah. Sports ball stuff.
Learning, ding, ding.
Hey, I'm sports ball talk. I'm happy my Steelers are still undefeated, even though they didn't deserve that win this week.
I'm unaffiliated with any sports team, so I'm also happy that the Steelers are doing good. So there. No one can take that away from
nobody me. Else cares about football on this show. But I will take the 10 seconds to be happy about my Steelers being undefeated. God
damn
it.
I'm happy because you're happy.
Thank you. Yeah. Oh, should we just get to reviews, or is there something that someone wants to talk about?
Not especially.
Why is it not especially? You should want to talk.
Well, we could talk about what happened today on Thursday, or we could let everybody chime in on it.
What happened on Thursday?
Cyberpunk got delayed again.
Oh, yeah.
Well, today's not Thursday. It's Tuesday.
I know. That's why I said we could talk about it on Thursday, or we could let everybody chime in on it.
It got delayed 3 weeks. I'm surprised it's only 3 weeks, I guess. Maybe it'll be more. Maybe it'll get delayed till next year. But
I'll be honest. I guess I can get it if a person's like, I have like enough money to buy 3 games a year. And since that's one of the 3 games, the fact that I got delayed is killing me. But if you're
sitting
not
on all that money.
Yeah, but if you actually, I'm not going to go so far as to say like if you're not broke or not, because I understand what it's like to be broke. But if you don't have if you're not in a situation where you can't acquire titles to play here and there, even cheap ones, I don't understand the big freaking hubbub. Oh, fuck, it's delayed. I'm going to scream about it. Who the fuck cares?
People are sending death threats to the developer.
Because they're stupid. Like, what is that? Well, first of all, even if it was all you could play, you're still stupid for sending death threats over a fucking piece of entertainment. But aside from that, we live in a smorgasbord of entertainment options right now. And if you're not able to play that game right now, I bet there's a big budget title that came out 2 years ago that you can get for $10 that you haven't seen or played yet. Why are you harassing these people? Just let them put the damn game out. If anything, I'd be surprised when it comes. Like, I go to Target to go pick up some freaking toilet paper. Oh, shit, Cyberpunk's out. And then I'd buy it, you know? And someone might be listening and going, well, it's because you review games. You were always like, fuck you. Even if I wasn't playing review codes, I still played games enough and acquired games in a way that allowed me to just kind of, I don't know, be occupied. And then I'm living my life outside of playing the games. So Stop. Yeah, Dale, you heard company.
Dale. Purnell. Who the fuck did Dale come from?
What? I don't know.
I have no idea. I was about to say, Purnell, you've definitely played every single game that you own, correct?
Exactly. I have fucking not. So it's like, I have no need. Even there's no reason. Like, games take so long to get through half the fucking time. Do you really need them to get this game out on the exact time you wanted it to come out? So what? Would you rather it come out, be shit, and you're like, well, man, then we gotta wait for a patch. You just ruined my perfect game experience. Like, shut up. God, people suck. I just can't. I fucking can't with people. Every time I see a delay in a game, or even worse, if you just try to look at like a general criticism, like let's say you're talking about it and you go, you know, I guess it's a good thing that this game got delayed a little. Again, basically feel like the reasonable guy in a thread. It's okay, I get delayed. As long as it comes out, this is a good game. And then someone comes in and responds like, well, maybe you'd say that, tard. Real gamers want it now. That's some bullshit. Like, that's what happens. I don't understand people. They drive me nuts. Play some fucking Borderlands or something. I don't know. Jesus.
Wow. That was a good rant.
Yeah.
Apparently I have a lot of rage. A lot of rage.
You know how you can take out your rage, Purnell?
You're welcome. You're welcome. How, Joe?
By hacking up zombies with a sword as a bikini woman.
That sounds like a LARP. Oh my god.
I remember that game. Wow.
That's actually the first game we're going to talk about tonight.
Oh.
Yes, that first game.
Some epic segue.
I know. I didn't work on that one at all. First game to talk about tonight is called Onichanbara Origin, developed by Tamsoft, published by D3 Publisher, released October 14th on PS4 and PC for $59.99. The story of Aya and Saki, two sisters bound by mutual hatred and locked in a brutal fight to the death, has been revived and reimagined. Purnell, tell us about this one.
Onichanbara is a hack and slash game, a style of game that would be very familiar to folks who've played titles such as, like, you know, I guess the most notable one that people still talk about somehow is Devil May Cry. But it plays kind of like that, and the fact that you are a character who is a very nimble and agile woman with a cowboy hat, because that's cool, who is a zombie hunter and is on a quest for vengeance and answers. The story is kind of there. There's actually surprisingly a lot to it, too. But I was like, I just want to hack stuff up. So the idea behind the game is you go from set piece to set piece in first form, like small stages. Like, the levels never get too big. There's like a couple screens here and there. And the idea is, as you go from area to area within a stage, you will get beset upon by various forms of zombie. Zombie dogs, zombie women, zombie men, zombie fat guys, zombie small guys, very zombie tall guys. The point is, everything's a zombie and you got to fuck it up. Even mud zombies sometimes. They're really dirty, too. The way you fight them is by the use of melee combat. You get a variety of bladed – well, not really. I won't go so far as to say a variety. You get your main sword. Later on, you get another sword, and then eventually – or a pair of swords. And later on, you get another character who has her own weaponry that she fights with. But ultimately, the idea is that you use your light weapon attacks button and heavy attack buttons, and between those two – you can pull off a few combos by the light button four times or the light button once and then the heavy twice, stuff like that. And as you kill more guys and level up at the end of each stage, you eventually can unlock longer combos or additional combos. So as you play the game, your repertoire of attacks will slowly kind of expand. It's not going to be a crazy diverse like fighting game, particular roster, but still cool enough that it's fun to play around with, especially once you get your sub weapons, because when you switch to a sub weapon, it gets its own set of attack combos, and you level up and get new attacks for that weapon as well as your original weapon. So, and like Devil May Cry, when you switch between the two weapons, you don't lose your combo. You just kind of keep wailing away. Now, one thing that would seem to be stupid, but actually is fun to execute in the game, is cleaning your blade. As you fight monsters using your hack and slash methods, your blade becomes
love very some good important. Sanitation in a game.
Oh yeah, there's all you sanitize the style of this bad boy. As you kill enemies, their blood gets all over your weapon. And as your weapon becomes bloodier, the blade becomes dull, and your weapons start to do poor damage. Now, the way that you are able to clean the blade and get back to hacking and slashing is by pressing the right bumper, left one bumper button, and you'll step back and kind of just swish the blood off the blade like they do in those cool anime, fight action movies. In which case, now the weapon is slightly less bloody because sometimes you don't get it all off in one swish. But your weapon's slightly less bloody, and you're back to doing normal damage with your attacks. However, whereas blood is bad for the weapon, it is great for the girl, because as she becomes bloodier, she eventually goes into a sort of berserker mode. And when she's bloody enough, she goes berserker, which allows her to strike faster and harder, but at the cost of her defense going to crap. So she takes more damage from hits. And if you continue to go berserk for an extended period of time, you go into ecstasy mode, where for some reason you become a demon. And your attacks become really powerful, and you become, infallible. So you still take damage, unflinchable. There we go. Because you still take damage, but you don't flinch from it. So it's kind of becomes a game where you can go bonkers and just wail on a guy, even if he's hitting you. But you got to be mindful of the fact that you are taking damage, despite the fact that you're not being knocked down. It's a nice little dance around there. Now, when you level up, like I mentioned earlier in the episode, you are able to extract and spend skill points, or not skill points, but like stat points. Nothing really complicated, just some you can choose between health, defense, and attack. I just kind of jammed up attack until I got bored, because I figured the best offense in the hack and slash game is offense. Kill guys quickly, you don't have to worry about taking damage. So I'm pretty much like invested in that. And one thing I want to mention about combat too is the fact that they have a dodge move and a parry move, and the fact that you can kind of stun enemies through repeated combat or repeated wailing. And eventually, if you stun a guy enough, you are able to kind of do like a special move where you kind of like blaze through them with like a nice like whirling spin of slash attack. So it actually hits multiple enemies when you do that. So it's worth kind of being mindful of enemies before you can stun them and pull that off. The parry is good, particularly because whereas in a lot of games, parrying is kind of just there for like extra finesse if you want to get it in. In this game, certain enemies are better attacked with parries, because normal attacks will either barely dent them, or it'll just make you have to wait until you build up to your berserk to actually do damage to the enemies. However, if you parry them instead, you can stun them, which then allows you to actually wail on them and do normal damage, or just outright straight up insta-kill them by doing a special move. So it's worth parrying.
I'm hearing a lot about the combat system and level up, blah, blah, blah. How's the fan service? That's what people want in this game.
Ah, Jesus, Joseph!
That's why people are buying this game. Let's just get to it. How's the fan service?
I gotta be honest, it's really not gratuitous, and I kind of like that. I was expecting this to be a game where, she'd like take damage and her clothes would tear up and mess like that. But honestly, no. And I don't come across a ton of scenes where, oh, hush you. I didn't come across a ton of scenes where like you just kind of have her randomly bending over and showing her ass or whatever. So it's like, it's almost like tasteful. Like she's running around doing her thing. She's getting covered in blood, but it's not like the rinky dink. Oh, wow. My tits are just kind of hanging out here, and the zombie, his face just fell right in between them. What am I supposed to do? I guess I got to let him rub it in a bit, taunt him, and then throw him away. Like none of that. So I genuinely actually appreciate that, because I could ask, this is one of those games where I could like play with something around somebody and be like, you're just hitting this for the tits. No, not really. Like, if I want tits, I got porn. This is just fun and slightly titillating. But I honestly came to really, I kind of dig this game. And it's funny because I do own a Onichan Bara Z Chaos, which came out a ways back. And as you can probably guess from Tim's earlier comment, I have not played it. So it was nice to play this one and get a feel for this franchise that I've been invested in for years but never experienced.
I will always enjoy the Wii version where you had to shake the Wiimote to get the blood off the sword.
Oh, that does sound like it would have been a cool little mechanic. Like, winky-dink and, like, gimmicky, yes, but gimmicks can be fun, so I'm okay with it. But, yeah, the game itself, I mean, it gets the job done. Like, I'm not going so far as to say that it's, like, it's Devil May Cry caliber, but then again, not too many hack and slashers are. Devil May Cry is a peak product. Well, some of them are. A few aren't. But for the most part,
you take that back.
I will hold on to it and shake it. Get all the blood off.
See, that's why you can't find your shoe, dude.
That is true. That is a child. I can't combo into my shoe.
Okay. Well, it's not Devil May Cry, but at $60, what do you think of it?
I honestly still think it's a solid buy it title. The game plays well. It's enjoyable. Great music. The writing is actually, it's camp, but good camp. Like, you're watching one of those, like, cheesy, like, 80s, like, action movies. It's good. I like it.
Cool. Anyone have any thoughts or questions?
How many boobies?
About how long is it? Like, how many missions? What kind of a campaign? Do you have any idea?
Honestly, I don't. It's fairly lengthy, but I didn't, like, sit down and count the missions themselves. But it's a combination of... What are you talking about?
I'm just saying, like, yeah, I was wondering how much of a rope, because I feel like in the past, you said it was 60, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like in the past they were like a bit more budget priced.
But yeah, I was surprised to see it at $60.
One thing about this one and why it might have gotten a bit more of a oomph, though I think Chaos was actually like normal price, but this one combines two of the games instead of just being one or the other. It's a re-envisioning of the first and second games, and they just titled it Origins.
There you go. So a lot of content. All right,
you're content with the content.
Years.
Oh my god.
You invite me on here.
I have nothing to say to that. Next game to talk about is called Pumpkin Jack, developed by Nicholas.
You are never pronouncing that name.
I am not ever pronouncing that name. Nicholas Masonier. We're going to go with that. Published by Head Up. Released October 23rd on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $29.99. Pumpkin Jack is a spooky, scary 3D platformer in which you embody Jack, the mythical pumpkin lord. Dive into an epic adventure through otherworldly landscapes and help the evil annihilate the good. Cole, tell us about Pumpkin Jack.
So there is a war going on between good and evil, and your pumpkin scarecrow dude named Jack has been brought to by Satan. And so your entire purpose is just to destroy the monsters because they're kind of dumb and they don't know the difference between you and a human, and defeat everything in the way so that Satan can take over. And you're going to do this in an oddly adorable 3D platformer. Every time I would get to a cutscene, and it would like remind me that you're like playing the bad guy, then I would just be like, it doesn't look like I should be playing the bad guy. it's almost, well, it's kid friendly enough that number three was like, can I play this? And I had to be like, no, you have to be at least a little bit older. But it looks enticing to kids. The art it's for this
spooky
game.
It comes off as spooky.
It does. It's not horror.
Spooky is fun.
Yeah, right? It's not horror by any stretch of the imagination. Even with all of the, what would typically be considered horror elements, it's not horror. You play as the Pumpkin Jack, and basically he's a pumpkin and he's got like a scarecrow body. You can get different skins for him. My favorite was the skeleton one. But Jack is stuck inside the pumpkin head, basically. And then he's got a little buddy. I use the term loosely. They have a love-hate relationship. a little crow that rides around with you. And then the crow is essentially your ranged attacks. You can press left bumper and he will fly out and attack other enemies. He'll stun them or stop them in some other way. Sometimes he'll just flat out destroy them if you hit it enough. A lot of times if I found myself in a predicament where some of the later levels, like the snipers, are kind of far off and they can hit the fuck out of you while you're platforming and make you have to start over again, which sucks.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like kind of hide behind things and just spam the crow and let them go and kill the sniper until I could safely go.
Guilty.
And yeah, it, like sometimes you just have to do what you can. But ultimately, like you're in each level, and you're collecting crow skulls and you're just as solving you puzzles and platforming and smashing monsters. I love collecting the crow skulls. So yeah, you just, you know, it's typical 3D action puzzle platformer kind of puzzle, light on the puzzle element. Some things require a little bit of sleuthing out, but it always like tells you basically how to do it.
No.
Like, oh no, there's a big machine up there with a monster launching arrows at you. You need to push this minecart over there and blow it up. And I'm like, well, thanks for the solution. when I played it pre-release, there were a couple issues. It was kind of a pain in the ass to grab a hold of minecarts in those levels, or I had a couple issues where like I'd fall through the floor. The development team have been fantastic about this. I don't know, Joe, if you even got the emails out to them about the problems I had, but on day one they were fixed. And I was like, well, now what the fuck am I supposed to complain about in my review? Because otherwise I fucking love the game. Even with the bugs, I was like, it was so much fun. And I
will say there are some frustrating sections in the game. I was not a fan of the minecart sections. They frustrated the shit out of me.
I don't know. I 1K'd the game and I was like, I did most of the parts several times and I didn't mind. I really didn't mind. I was like, yeah, this is.
You didn't mind.
Mind.
I know. Mind. I know. I was, as soon as I said it, like, the time, I was like, these fuckers are going to latch onto that.
Yeah.
But it didn't bother me. I didn't have any real complaints with anything other than the couple times that it bugged out on me, and it's not doing that anymore. So I don't know what I'm supposed to bitch about. I'm like, I just really like this game. It takes about 4, maybe 5 hours. It has chapter select. So you can go back and get the collectibles that you missed. The only thing with that is that there were a couple of times where like I wish it broke it down into different parts of the chapters.
Yeah, because some of those levels are pretty big.
Yeah, and if you're, they all have 20 crow skulls in them. So if you're missing one, you are going to be forever. There's also the quirk of if you quit a level partway because you think you got all the skulls up to that part and you want to go back to the beginning because you think you missed one in the beginning, you have to finish the whole level, beat the boss, and then choose chapter select to start it at the beginning. Because otherwise, chapter select will just keep picking up where you left it off at. So yeah, it would be nice if they like broke it down into a couple different, even if it was just 2 or 3 smaller sections to make it easier to go different areas looking for the collectibles.
Yeah.
It is nice that it lists, okay, you have X out of 20 of the collectibles. There's only 1 gramophone in each one that you can go looking for. And, it times it. You know, I don't give a fuck about the time. There's no achievement. I don't care how long it fucking takes me to do this. I'll get it done. But yeah, I had such a good time. Like, I've been playing a lot of these 3D platformers lately, and I've been kind of like, over a lot of them. And I wasn't expecting to like Pumpkin Jack. I was like, I'm going to take it. Because it's spooky season and I want something spooky to play that's not going to actually scare me every time I load it up. And so I was like, I'll take it. And then I was like, Jesus fucking Christ, why do I love this game so much?
The only thing scary is how it's so good by a solo developer.
Yeah, it's really impressive. It really is. And the fact that, you know, the issues that I had with it were patched just that fast. Yeah. And I've seen full-on ass dead dev teams not be dead dev teams. No.
Dead teams.
Ooh, the drugs are hard tonight. Dev teams not be able to fix shit that I complained about before release. And I'm like, well, this guy's just knocking it out the fucking park.
Yeah, shit. Look how long it's taken Nintendo to release inverted controls for Mario All-Stars.
At least they did. Oh my God. Now I can play Sunshine.
Yeah.
Terrible. So, you know, I mean, I
Pumpkin Jack has inverted camera controls.
Thank you.
It does. I would have liked some more sensitivity controls, but for what's there, I mean, you can control the camera sensitivity, but not for movement. But I mean, it was responsive enough. It wasn't problematic, and the game's reasonably lengthy enough that it keeps you going, but it's not so long that, like, I was dead from fatigue by the time I finished playing it.
No.
It's easy enough to just stop and pick up and play later if I'm getting tired. That I wasn't overly frustrated by the lack of a sensitivity control other than the camera. I will say, too, automatic cameras in these 3D platformers are never good. And yet somehow Pumpkin Jacks is fine. And there were actually a couple levels I thought were easier if I turned it on. Hmm. And I was like, hell yeah.
Yeah, you don't see that often in 3D platformers.
I was content. I was like, this is great. What the fuck?
All right. Well, $29.99, your thoughts?
I think it's a buy it. And I'd also say do it quickly because it's on sale right now.
How long is it on sale for?
I think it's a 10-day launch sale or maybe only 7, but I think it might be 10. Yeah, it's $23.99 everywhere currently.
Cool.
Yeah.
Jump on that quick and get it at a discount.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it.
Awesome. All right. Next game to talk about is called Fractor, developed by 4L Games, published by the Quantum Astrophysicists Guild, released October 22nd on Switch for $6.99. Fractor follows a veiled young hero who has set out on a perilous quest for light through a cryptic labyrinth of shadows. Tim, tell us about Fractor.
Fractor, not fracture. It's yes. Fractor. Yes. Yeah, I definitely remember the name of this game and had no trouble. Like, I'm sorry. I'm just an idiot like that sometimes. So, yeah, Fractor. This is a port from like your iPad phone game thing, which is that's where it came from, which is fine. It is, yeah, an isometric puzzle game. It has a very sharp look to it for being so simplistic. Like, it's just a grayscale. It's pretty simple shapes. Like, your character has stubby little legs and stubby little arms as they tippy tap their way around these mazes. But it all works and it looks nice, and I wouldn't call it overly simplistic at all. I think, like, the shading and the general look of the levels in the whole game is very good. Definitely holds up. There's a good minimalist soundscape to it as well. Like, just the game in general just has a really nice mood to it, I would say. So what you do in the game, it's pretty straightforward. You navigate your little guy or girl, your little stubby leg person through these mazes. You walk around and you have a cursor to that you will move around, which would have been the touch feature on a like an iPad or phone, which is why I brought the only reason I brought that up earlier. So that you can like grab objects in the environment, like there'll be like switches, or there will be a lot of the kind of the mechanics of the game play around with light. Like, there will be these light emitters, and sometimes they will have like slats over them that you need to pull up in order to activate the emitter, because you don't necessarily want them all activated all at the same time, because of puzzling reasons. But you will slide things. Some things are like in like a little groove, so you got to move them around or rotate them. So there's like you're basically manipulating these things to activate switches to make your way through the environment. Each kind of stage, I guess. It's cordoned off into like five, six, seven areas, something like that. Each stage, there you just have to kind of navigate your way through the maze for one. But there will also be like these light silhouettes of yourself around that you need to find and collect along the way. And also along the way, there is a bit of stealth in this game in that there are these shadowy looking motherfuckers who earn the term motherfucker because when they see you, they pop down to all fours and creepy crawly after you and jump up on your spine and then make you like them.
That doesn't sound horrifying at all.
Oh, it's super pleasant. Oh my God. Just like, like, what are you? My goodness. Yeah, that's definitely a thing. But they're not, that can be a little, I will say a little bit frustrating sometimes, just like as you're going around the environment, it can kind of be tough to tell like where they are, where they're looking. And sometimes you'll kind of get spotted out like a little sooner than you might think you will or should, but it's fine. It's just like, okay, well, other than the horrible like injection to your back that makes you a shadow person, it's fine. You know, it's not the worst thing that's happened to you in 2020. Some might even welcome it, right? So yeah, it doesn't set you back too far, is what I'm getting at. But yeah, the game's not like too long. It'll take you like a few hours to navigate your way through. And it's pretty fun and engaging overall. There's some fun, interesting, intriguing enough story bits along the way. Does not overstay its welcome, much like the aforementioned Pumpkin Jack. And it's only like $7, and I think it's on sale for like $5.50 right now on the Switch. So
$7, your official verdict?
Yeah, that's not bad. That's a solid buy if you're looking for this type of puzzle-y. Just like simple, straight, like it's not too tight. It's just, yeah, it's got a nice vibe to it. Like, yeah, it's pretty cool. And for $7, I think that's a solid price for it.
Cool beans. All right.
Awesome.
Well, that's it for you.
Yeah, that's when I get to go to bed. I will go to bed.
You enjoy yourself and we will see you next time.
Sure. Don't you want to ask if I have any final thoughts, Joe?
Do you have any final thoughts?
I will say that while I did have a little trouble remembering the name of Fractor, it did not factor into my review at all.
Fuck
good
you.
Night.
Fuck you. Oh my God. All right. Next game to talk about is called Galicide, developed and published by Puny Humans, released October 23rd on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99. Command destructive spaceships to obliterate hordes of enemy vessels while quickly solving puzzles to weave through networks of vibrantly colorful adversarial machines. Chris, tell us about Galicide.
All right, Galicide. Well, I feel like I've been, first I want to say that I feel like I've been like rewarded for doing three like open world adventure type games in 1 week by being handed like all these great like shmups and stuff. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
So yes, Galicide. This is a side-scrolling shoot 'em up. Now, if you're not familiar with the... Okay. It's a side-scrolling pew-pew game. So this one takes an interesting spin on things. And, you know, basically you are a ship, of course, and you move from left to right. And, you know, you get through stages and shoot down other ships. And then occasionally there's a big boss that you have to fight and all this other stuff. But what this game does is it impedes your progress by throwing in just a ton of these little machines that put out these different colored force fields that, you know, go all the way across the level. So there's no getting past them unless you pick up a piece of scrap that is just going to be floating through the stage. You pick it up and you basically throw it at a light color. And if you can link four of those together or more, they explode, thus creating a path right through. So, yeah, it's in a sense... it's a little bit like R-Type mixed with Puzzle Bobble or Bust a Move. If you're familiar with the Taito puzzle game where you basically have to shoot marbles at other marbles, and when you link up enough colors, then they explode. And, you know, that,
I was getting a Magical Drop feel from it with the whole shooting pieces and matching up colors.
Oh, whoa, whoa.
That's probably better.
tell me more about that.
I haven't played much Magical Drop. I played Money Puzzle Exchanger, though.
They hit the same notes, though, so yeah. It's similar to one, it's similar to both.
Exactly. So while you're side-scrolling and shooting them up, shooting down enemies, avoiding bullets and stuff like that, you're also picking up colored pieces of stuff that you can shoot out of the front of your ship like an R-type bot, or, again, like, you know, something in one of these action puzzle games. And it's all about, like, trying to kind of blaze your path through all of these colored force fields in order to get through. And that's usually the bulk of the level. So it's very much, like, neatly divided into shoot 'em up and puzzle. As far as that goes, like, that's, you know, they do a lot of stuff to, like, make the puzzles interesting. For one, if you have, let's say, you picked up a green piece, but the wall is purple, but you could still get through it if you could just get, you know, one of them to change color. You can actually run your ship into the force field and jam that green thing into the purple thing and then turn it green if that, you know, helps you get through the stage. So you can change the colors of some of the spheres. And you can also do that to, like, you know, rack up more explosions, essentially. And so, yeah, there's, like, really cool stuff. Like, it's not just random. It's, like, there's cool stuff that you can do in these stages and stuff. And interestingly, as a bonus material, on top of the actual shoot 'em up, which is good, by the way, it's pretty well made. And, you know, like I said, the puzzle and then the shooting parts, like, blend pretty well. Bosses are really interesting. Graphics are great. It is a really pretty game. Soundtrack's pretty all right. But anyways, on top of the shoot 'em up levels, you can actually access a puzzle mode where it's only just your ship and the puzzle. Nothing's moving. You can just pick up the pieces as you like and throw them at pre-made puzzles in order to try and clear the screen. So, and there's several of those, and they're hard. So you can, just take out the shoot 'em up altogether and just play the puzzle game. Or if you just want to play the shoot 'em up without any puzzles, you can play a different game.
I think this is a really cool mix. I haven't seen a puzzle shmup like this, and it's a really cool blend of genres.
Yeah, they're pretty rare. Like, I'm actually having trouble coming up with an example myself that isn't just, like, maybe one themed level. Because some of the, like, bullet hell shooters will have, like, one themed level where it's, like, you do have to actually do some thinking and to get through the stage instead of just blowing up everything. Yeah. Castle of Shikigami 2 comes to mind, has a puzzly stage like that. But yeah, it's hardly ever woven into the entire gameplay like this. And they really, like, threw 100% into it. So it's difficult, but not because it's a difficult shooter. There's plenty of those, and I'm going to review one in a little bit. but I do really enjoy the twist that they've added here.
Cool. So overall, $15, your thoughts?
I think it is a buy it. I think that, well, as a puzzle fan who is also, like, obsessed with shoot 'em ups, I think that it definitely hit both notes for me. Of course, it's gonna, you know, the difficulty ramps up pretty early on in terms of the puzzle part of it, but that just might be my relative, like, I usually have a long time getting to know a puzzle game before I can actually get good. And so that part of it, you know, I've had me scratching my head a couple of times. And like I said, the screen, the fact that it's scrolling, like, all the time, you know, that kind of puts you in a panic and stuff. But it's a little bit difficult, but once you get, like, into the rhythm of, like, you know, sort of planning your route and, like, changing those colors and stuff, it's definitely a worthwhile experience. So yeah, this has my recommendation for sure.
Cool. All right, next game to talk about is Outpost Delta, developed and published by Hidden Achievement, released October 20th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $24.99. Outpost Delta is a single-player 2D side-scrolling sci-fi shooter for PC and console. Take on the role of Delta, the Outpost's emergency defense, who along with her AI companion must defend the space station against alien intruders. Purnell, tell us about Outpost Delta.
Well, Outpost Delta is Metroidvania. Next one. Well, it's a let's just call it an action adventure game. So I don't want to call it a Metroidvania today. Where you are tasked, as you said, as Delta, and you're exploring a space station that is currently semi-abandoned and under attack by an alien force who is trying to use the force that's on the ship or on the station to decimate the planet that is, you know, orbiting. So it's weird in the sense that this game at base value is pretty awesome by description. You are a character who gets a firearm, but the way that works that makes it particularly cool is that it's a twin stick shooter, or it runs with twin sticks. So it's a 2D game. You use the left stick to move the character around and the right stick to aim the gun, but also the direction you're facing. So if you say, for example, are running right, but you held left, or you last press left and let it go on the right thumbstick, you'll run facing the opposite direction that you're running, which is kind of nifty. In addition to that, well, that is it. That's all there is to the combat. That's the gimmick is twin stick shooting, which is cool. However, the downside to it is that the combat itself is a pain in the butt. There are a few weird things about this game that kind of hit me on all the wrong notes, but I need to address them and then let people decide for themselves what they want to do with it. So,
can I point out my one gripe first?
Go for it.
I hate the fact that jump is on a face button when there's twin stick controls.
Oh, I can definitely see that, because there's areas in the game where you'll be wanting to shoot dudes and jump, or jump to shoot at a distant angle and you can't quite nail it.
Yeah, jump should be on a bumper or a trigger or something.
Or at least let you configure to do so. I wish that was my only gripe. Oh, mercy.
All right, what are yours?
Okay, so in addition to that element, there's also the fact that combat, so your default weapon is a pea shooter, and you get other weapons as you go. However, when you do get new weapons, they don't really give you any insight on how those weapons function. So it's trial and error to see what they do, and that usually can get you killed. An example is the second weapon you get is a laser. Laser seems like it would be pretty cool, except the laser doesn't hurt any of the enemies you fight. So you're spraying a laser to a guy who's just running at your face and punching you, and then you die. So it would have been real nice if they at least kind of gave you some context on how the weapons worked. I like experimentation as much as the next guy. However, the hiccup with this game in regards to experimentation with weapons and combat is that more often than not, you are kind of at the mercy of enemies in the game, because the AI isn't particularly smart, but enemy placement coupled with your pea shooter pew-pew generally results in you getting your ass handed to you by virtue of just walking into a room. Give you an example. There was an area in the game where you took an elevator downstairs, and when you open the elevator door, and what I mean open, I mean you literally just walk out off the elevator, a gunman comes at you full steam ahead firing shots at you, and there's a flying enemy that also comes flying at you. They are both a combination of dicks. Your gun doesn't shoot fast enough to take them out before they kill you. You've got nowhere to run to evade them. You're just kind of dead.
Damn.
Eventually, I just kind of started kind of gimmicking it where I took the elevator back up to try to make the AI forget I was there, come back down, get a few shots, and wash, rinse, repeat until I somehow survived it. It was stupid. And then in addition to that, also, there's the fact that, well, when you play a lot of these kinds of games, one of the things that usually seems really cool is when you're moving through an area and you see a door that's locked. You're like, oh, man, I can't wait to come back to that area later with the right key. There must be something cool back there, or another area of the ship. However, the way this game decides to play with keys is they take each area you go to for the most part and just break them all up with different keys. So, like, you'll go into one area, got to find 5 keys in that one room to get through the entire area. However, you can't bring up a map. So, there is a mini map in the corner, but you can't expand that map. Have you figured out a way to expand the map, Joe?
No.
So there it is. Can't expand the map. And you're just kind of, and you can't bring up a full map. So, what ends up happening is you're running around looking for key 1 to open door 1, which then hopefully you can find key 2 to open door 2, eventually find key 3 to open through door 3, up through door 5 to get out of the area you're in. I got so bored trying to remember what elevator led to which forgotten locked door that it just kind of sucked all the joy out of the play. Like, I hate saying it in that way, but it's true. Like, good level design is a virtue. It's something to be cherished and acknowledged. So by that same token, when level design kind of, in my opinion, does a disservice to what you're trying to build, it should also be stated and acknowledged, because this game by level design contest could have been really awesome, because it has two mechanics that I think are great for quality space levels, which are gravity control, in which case certain areas of the game or certain points in the game, you are able to use the controller to either reduce or increase gravity. Sometimes to the point where you can just kind of fly around the ship. And when you're flying around the ship, you get a jet fuel meter that determines how long you can stay in the air and propel yourself. To me, that's really awesome. I like that a lot. And I would like the fact that I would have loved to be able to have been, like, you know, content with playing through the game so much that getting in those areas would have been especially fun for ship exploration. The other thing that I like is anti-gravity, or not anti-gravity, but playing with gravity or magnetic gravity. So you get boots which allow you to walk along certain walls and ceilings, which, again, would be a lot of fun in an area where, like, level design was pretty awesome. But I will say one of the biggest things that hit me that made me angry is the fact there are actually times, it happened to me twice already, where you can actually get stuck and have to start over. Not the whole game, of course, thankfully, but just your save file. Like, you can actually fall into a location where you can't get out and you have to start over.
Damn.
Like, cause like, so like that sort of thing is like, you play test that stuff out. Like, that's just ridiculous. You don't do that, man. But it just, it's a game. It bugs me because to me, this is a game that should have been fun. I should have been on here right now going, this game was a lot of fun. I had a great time playing it. The AI was witty, told me where to go, you know, exploration, got my upgrade to my health and mess, but instead I'm complaining about level design and having to find 15 keys and 15 doors, and it just wasn't very fun.
Damn. Well, $24.99, I need a verdict.
You gotta go with a denied on this one. It's a rarity, but I feel like I can't go beyond that.
What could they do to improve it?
To be honest, with this game, given the nature of the build, they'd have to make like a new one or a sequel, because the level design and the combat are the two biggest offenders. Or even hell, let's just, that ain't go that far. Let's just let you pull up the map and expand it so you can actually look and go, okay, looks like that's the place over there I didn't go last time. Let me go over there and open that door. That would be pretty nifty, you know, because that would have made the navigation easier, which would have made it easier for me to deal with the other issues I had. Second thing would be maybe, I don't know, give you either like maybe a shield option where you can kind of like do like a little bit of bullet blocking if you need to, or just make your pea shooter stronger or shoot faster so that you can deal with the fact that enemies fire faster than you, can take hits, and are just kind of standing in front of you, popping you in the face. Like, it's, I mean, there's hope. I mean, they could always make another one where, like, taking that kind of stuff to heart, but.
Yeah, Carnage saying that the price is a bit too expensive, too. I can agree with that. This is something I would have expected to see at, like, $15, so seeing the $25 price tag kind of surprised me. But I don't know what goes into pricing decisions, so that's why I don't try to bring that up too often, just because I don't know the decisions behind why they had to put that price on it, so.
But I do want to ask you, because I guess the second opinion on this, did you experience like fighting like the gunmen on the ship at any point, any moments where you kind of felt like you were just sort of like at the mercy of, I hope I kill that guy before he kills me, because. Ugh.
Yeah, it just, I can agree with you in that it just didn't feel very engaging, and it was just, I don't know, it didn't hook me.
Yeah. I mean, not to say that, like I said, I would have liked for it to have been better. It just didn't quite cut the space and mustard.
Let me jump easily without needing the face button. Anyway, next game to talk about is the Jackbox Party Pack 7, developed and published by Jackbox Games, released October 15th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $29.99. Five new games, the hit threequel Quiplash 3, the collaborative Chaos of the Devils in the Details, the fierce drawing game Champed Up, the speech game Talking Points, and the guessing game Blather Round. Use phones or tablets as controllers and play with up to 8 players or an audience of up to 10,000. Cole, I'm sure you had that many watching you stream, right?
Yeah, I waited 15 minutes for nobody to join. I went and played Ooblets until somebody showed up.
You didn't tell me you were playing.
I did.
When?
I tweeted and everything. I was like, I am going to play Jackbox. It was like...
Did you tag me?
No, I didn't tag you.
Oh, well, what the...
I don't remember to tag people. That's too much.
Proud of you.
But yeah. Anyway, so I didn't have that many people watching me. But there are a lot of people who love playing the Jackbox games on Twitch. And that's one of the great elements of it is that only one person needs to have it to stream it. And then other people join in on their devices. So it lets you play. And they very much embrace that community side. I think this is for Seven, this is their largest advancement of streaming features in the games. In under the settings, we've had options for like, oh, you have to sign in with your Twitch, which is fantastic. Keeps people from putting racist shit. or at least if they do put racist shit, you can ban them.
Yeah.
So you have, you know, features like, oh, you can hide the room code. You have to tell people the room code so not just anybody can join. Or you can, you know, sign in with Twitch and use extended timers and all that. All those things have been very helpful, but there were still a lot of problems to be had with streaming Jackbox games. I had a guy propose to me when I was streaming Party Pack 6.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Over, he had the damn rapping robot ask me to marry him.
Wow.
And I'm like, I don't even fucking know you. So there's still issues to be had with streaming a Jackbox game. And I think as far as Seven goes, it's definitely the biggest advancement in options. Now you can actually set it up to where there are profanity filters and they can be moderate or strict. Moderate just kind of looks out for that racist shit that you got to worry about. And then the strict will just nix all profanity. But then there's also the ability to give a password to moderators who can moderate what's being input before it shows up on the stream. That's really awesome. I didn't have to use it. Like I said, I just had a small group playing with me. It was all people I knew and trusted.
Yeah.
But just the fact they've gone in and included these options is a big deal because these are new. And even though they've made all these leaps and strides in adding moderation and filters and things for streaming, the games themselves all feel very much like they are best suited to playing in a room with other people. with the exception of the drawing game, which is Champed Up, that's a 10 out of 10. I think.
Well, let's go through them. Okay. Let's start Quiplash 3. Tell us about that one quick.
So it's just Quiplash. Okay. They give you a prompt. You either fill in the blanks or you write something witty and then everybody votes on it. I mean, there isn't any big changes there. It's just new prompts, basically. If you've played, if you're buying this specifically for Quiplash, it's Quiplash. It can be funny with the right group. It can be problematic with the wrong one.
Yeah.
But it at least streams well. It's fun. After that is The Devil in the Details.
Yep.
I love The Devil in the Details. And it was so much fun to play it with my family in the room. Because the whole premise of this one is that you have the devils have come to Earth and they have to pretend to be humans. And so you have a family score, but each person also has an individual score. So the goal is you'll have an event. There's all kinds of different events you can choose from. One we picked was it was a great aunt that nobody likes birthday and you had to plan a party for her. And another one was that it was her 666th birthday, no less. The other one was like the teenager was bringing over a boyfriend or a potential interest for a dinner. And so you had to have things where you like had to go and go get groceries and, or you had to clean up and, you know, sweep or whatever. The way that these are done is that on your device, this is the most complicated one of them all to describe. On your device, you had like a list, a to-do list, and you could go on it and click it. But now each person at the beginning of the game is assigned an age. So like there will be two parents or one if there's not a lot of people playing, but there will be a parent, there will be teens, and then there will be kids. Kids obviously can't hop in the car and go get flowers for a centerpiece, right?
Yeah.
So they need an adult to go with them. Or teenagers, doesn't matter how many times you tell them to clean their room, they're going to go look at nudie bags instead, right? They're devils, right? So sometimes they go do selfish things. And you can, if you have a selfish, can't speak.
This one seems selfish. Like something that's better, like in experience than telling.
Yeah, it's like I'm said, it's complicated. So like if you have a selfish experience come up that you can do, then you can just, once you just tap on it, like it's literally just, oh, like rub your finger on your phone to do the actual task. But whether or not you need help with it or you can do it on your fucking own, if you're doing something selfish, that doesn't raise the family score. It raises your personal score. So if you're being selfish, yeah, you might win the game, but your family's not going to reach the goal. And also everybody's going to know it when they see your high ass score at the end.
you want to know what else is high? The fact that root beer subbed for 18 months. Right, Pernell?
Fucking yeah.
That's right.
Yes. Yes. It's so true. Root beer did.
Oh, man. All right. So Champed Up. What's this one?
Champed Up is the drawing game. And basically, you're given a scenario like who would be the ultimate champion of the mall, right? And then your goal is to draw what you think that champion might look like. In my case, I drew a Karen because Karens go to malls, right? Mm-hmm. That's where Target's at. So then you draw your champion, you give them a name, we'll name mine Karen. And then whoever else is playing also has different prompts that they'll have to draw. Now everybody has their own prompt initially. The second prompt comes up and you actually get to see another player's champion, but you don't know the prompt. So you have to create an underdog with what little information you can get from their champion. And then that's who the fight goes against. And then the audience votes which one they think is better suited for the title.
Interesting.
This actually led to a lot of fun, but it also led to a lot of dick jokes.
I can imagine. Any kind of drawing game is going to lead to dicks.
It took immediately 13 seconds to get a fleshlight drawn. But, you know, at least this one gives you some options. Some of the other drawing games in previous party packs, they're a little hit or miss on like giving you extra colors or giving you different pencil types and stuff. TKO probably did the best out of all of them. And even it was still super limited. Whereas this one, it does give you two pencil types. I would like to have seen a little more like variety in whether you just have like a marker or a pen. You do have a couple of color options, which makes things a little more interesting. But I would have liked to have seen, I always would like some kind of slider for pencil width at least. But we never get that. It breaks my heart. I just want a pencil width slider. Also, I cheat and I play on a drawing tablet, so I win all of them.
Oh, you are a cheater, so fuck you. All right, so you're a cheater-ass cheater at Champed Up. What is talking points?
Talking points, can I be honest?
Sure, you cheater.
I played it with my kids and I forgot. I just like, I don't even remember what this one was, except for there was a lot of talking. And I remember going, oh yeah, we should probably not play this one on stream. Because it requires you to like give big lengthy speeches. And I was like, yeah, that's not gonna, I forget. It's like you have completely random shit to talk about. And I was like, and then we played it and then I just completely forgot all about it. Not right. Our favorite. We like The Devil in the Details clearly way better. But it's, again, it's not one that would play well on stream.
All right. Well, last one is Blather Round. What's that?
Blather Round, again, is one that it wouldn't play as well on stream. We didn't play it on stream. I do remember playing this one at least. I was sitting there when you were listening off. I was like, I cannot remember what talking points fucking was. but Blather Round is, it lets you pick an item. So you can pick a person, place, or thing. Usually you have a list of like three things to choose from. So say I chose spoon, right?
Okay.
And then after that, it gives you two lists. I don't know, I'm getting ahead of myself here. Two lists. And you can pick phrases from these lists to put together to give clues. And everybody else has to try to guess what whatever your original word was. So if I picked spoon, then I would say it's a shiny item, right? And then everybody else is like blathering out, trying to figure out what a shiny item could be. And then as they type in different words, if they get something that's kind of suitable to be used as a clue, you can bring it back and it will be added to your list of clues. And you can say, okay, I said it was a shiny item. Somebody said utensil, but didn't say spoon. Then I could go back to my list and say, a utensil you can dig with, you know? And like, depending on what options I have, I could piece together enough of a sentence to give a clue that would help everybody guess what it was. Again, I'm so grateful for all the new moderation tricks that they've added to Party Pack 7. But all the games are definitely better played either in a party with people you know, or who are at least going to be able to like verbally talk it out.
Yeah.
Or played in a room with people you know. They don't stream near
an actual party, which, you know,
yeah,
it's a pandemic and you shouldn't be having any of those right now.
Yeah, don't do that. Do not have a party. Just load up Twitch and play nothing but Champed Up, because that's clearly the winner and the best Quiplash. One out of all of there.
Play some Quiplash and too.
Quiplash works too.
Yeah, can't I would go wrong say, with Quiplash.
I mean, if you're doing like a voice chat thing and people are talking it out, then you might do better than if you're just trying to get people, because nobody wanted to type in chat and be like, hey, yeah, come help me go get flowers for grandma.
No.
You know? So that definitely made it a lot harder, but.
All right. Well, overall $30 on the pack. What do you say?
I give it a buy. I love the Jackbox games. I really do. And I see that they managed to just like get more and more creative every time. I would say if you're looking to stream it, maybe heed a little warning as to what you're getting, because they're not the best stream games. But as far as playing, just being good in general, they are.
If you have a family that you can play with,
you're going to get more mileage out of it. Yeah.
Or if you can have a party eventually.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Next game to talk about is called Dreadstar, The Quest for Revenge, developed and published by Augmented Irreality, released October 20th on Steam for $9.99. Dreadstar is a retro-inspired top-down shooter that blends RPG progression elements with gorgeous pixel art epic bosses in 6 replayable sectors. With unique customization, you'll need to avenge your father, improve your loadouts as you go, all while taking on a variety of diverse enemies. Chris, tell us about Dreadstar, The Quest for Revenge.
I started talking and then my mic was muted.
Nice. Proud of you.
Yeah, totally. Like, it's one where you like try to take off running and then like your shoelace is untied, so you just immediately like fall flat on your face, and then that like just affects the whole run after that. Anyway.
Anyway, Dreadstar.
Yeah, Dreadstar, The Quest for Revenge. I think that's what I was trying to say. This is another shmup. It is this time a top-down shooter. And instead of being done in them highfalutin Unity Engine, like, you know, nice graphics type thing, this one harkens back to the olden days with pixel art that we never saw in the olden days because it's way too advanced. But so it's like, I like to call this retro nouveau. Like it's achieving the look and sound of retro, but clearly made with like the, you know, with the the past all informing it. That is to say, it's like advanced and yet retro. So it's like that. By the way, great soundtrack on this one. It's very like, I want to say Commodore 64-ish, which is kind of cool. So yeah, the story is, I guess you're Mr. Dreadstar, Philip Dreadstar. I've decided that's his name. And your dad gets fragged, and so you set out in your tiny, tiny little, just a phone booth of a ship, in order to exact revenge against a fleet of menaces. And this doesn't go well. You get killed constantly because this is a pretty difficult shooter at first. And I say at first because, yeah, the whole point of the thing is not so much that you're trying to get by on your skill. In fact, it is not recommended. Like, you kind of have to unthink the way at least I play shooters is, you know, it's kind of like sweeping from side to side and like trying to get all the enemies as they come up on the screen. Mm-hmm. You get hit 3 times in this at any point in the stage. And by the way, the stages are pretty lengthy and usually feature a mid boss and an end boss that has multiple phases. And you have initially three hits to get through all of that. With a primary weapon and a secondary weapon, which starts off being the primary weapon, which, by the way, it follows the rule of if you're just firing your one weapon, then you don't lose speed. But if you fire your second weapon, then it goes into focus mode, which makes your ship slower. I think you can toggle that off, but I don't because that's the way I like to play. Let me see. Focus mode. Yeah, it has a toggle for focus mode. Anyways, so basically, it's not about trying to get by on your skill with your tiny little phone booth and, like, you know, actually destroy all the enemies. It's actually much better if you just pick, like, one side and then just kind of, like, pick at the enemies that are directly in front of you. and also the whole thing with the secondary weapon is that it's more powerful. Like, it's a double shot that gets added to your primary shot, but it has a heat rating, so if you use it too much, then it gets overheated and you have to wait a second for it to cool down. So there's a little bit of cooldown there, so you have to strategize accordingly. So the thing is that as you defeat enemy ships, you pick up experience points and money, well, gems, but that's money. And if you can complete the level, which I actually did before I figured out this one thing I'm about to talk about, then you get all that money, and then you can put that money directly back into all kinds of ways to customize your ship. It's kind of like a racing game in the amount of stuff you can buy. You can buy new engines, new weapons, of course, entire new ships that get, I suppose, more unlocked as the game progresses, because there's only 4 in the shop initially, so don't know what that's all about. And, you know, you can, like, buy specials, you can buy, like, option ships and things like that. Just the whole world is your oyster. Plus, with the experience points that you gain, you can actually raise the stats on your ship. Every time you gain a level, you can just dump 1 point into your primary weapon, and, you know, every 5 levels or so, then a marked improvement occurs, and you can basically edit your ship to, like, you can choose what your left weapon is going to be, your center weapon, your right weapon. There's all kinds of ways that you can build the ship of your dreams in this game, and then, you know, take on the hordes with something that's actually serious, more nice. Serious than Pillbox. Yeah. The thing is, and this is the most important part of the review for me, I went in all guns a-blazing and, like, you know, I was like, okay, well, then I'm going to, like, just go in there and shoot everything. And when I die, I'm going to get back to the hub and, you know, gain levels and buy stuff, and then we'll get serious. So I died many times, many, many times in level 1. And, so it sent me back to the hub. I was gaining experience points, but, oh, I don't have any money. It didn't save my money. I guess I have to, like, beat the boss in order to get my money.
Oh, and, man.
Yeah, after, like, about, I'm going to say, honestly, 35 to 40 tries, I finally got through the stage, the mid-boss, the main boss, all 3 phases. And by the way, there's little astronaut guys that you can pick up, and they'll attach themselves to your ship and, like, kind of flail, like, comically. And, if you can survive to the end of the level without, getting hit, then I assume something happens, 'cause I've never done it. There's like little guys you can pick up to help you along. I assume it's a bonus. Anyways, finally, I defeated the first boss. Finally. And then I got into the second level, you know, same process started over again. And then I finally thought to hit the triangle button on my PS4 controller, the Xbox Y button. And guess what that does? It lets you escape a level with all your gems intact before you get in over your head. I do not remember that feature getting advertised in any way in this game, or maybe I was just too sleepy or something. That changed everything. I was going to give this game like just a try it because it's so difficult. But it turns out I was the one being played.
Self-imposed hard mode.
I played myself. Yeah, there's actually three difficulty levels. There's normal, hard, and extreme. So I was like, God, what's extreme like then? No, like the fact that this lets you abandon ship, as it were, and like actually save up your coins and save up your experience points and, you know, get as far as you can without going over, then yeah, this is a fantastic little shoot 'em up because, you know, I would give up after like five tries if it wasn't fun.
Yeah.
This game was very, yeah, it's just got a lot of heart to it. Like the enemies are great. The patterns are great. It follows a lot of the old school stuff. It even has some like video gamey jokes in it. Like there's a can of Nuka-Cola somewhere and they mention Commander Shepard at some point. And, nice. You know, I think one of the achievements I got was a Killer Instinct reference. So, you know, this is clearly a game made by people who enjoy games. And I wish that they would have made that eject button more apparent, even though it's literally right there under my thumb and I just wasn't using it.
Yeah, proud of you.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
So, 10 just, bucks, your thoughts?
Absolutely pick this one up. This is great. It combines every, like, it adds in every aspect of, like, an RPG that ticks the boxes for me without it ever straying from being just a straight-up good retro shooter. So, heartily recommend.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Neighbors Back from Hell, developed by MIG, published by Handy Games, released October 8th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99. There goes the neighborhood. Play the star of a cheeky TV show who takes revenge on his horrible neighbor by constantly pranking him at home and all around the world in the most creative and ludicrous ways. Brunel, tell us about Neighbors Back from Hell.
Well, Neighbors Back from Hell falls into a really weird box for me. And it's going to be, well, I'll just talk about it and we'll go from there. So the idea behind this game is that your name is Woody. You're a mild-mannered guy who just likes a little bit of peace and quiet, but your neighbors are pieces of shit. And suffice to say, they make living in your home a pain in the absolute ass, something that many of us in this world have experienced at some point in our lives, douchey neighbors. However, Woody decides that enough's enough, and to get retaliate on this neighbor, he decides to, for whatever reason, get a hold of a TV crew, break into his neighbor's house, and prank him to high holy hell, which it makes you kind of wonder who's truly the neighbor from hell here, the actual shitty neighbor or Woody, what he's been pushed too far. I'm okay with Woody doing it because it's kind of like living out a little dream that I've always had my damn self. So it is what it is. So the idea behind the game is that you walk into your neighbor's house and the neighbor, unbeknownst to you being in, he's unaware that you're in the house. He is living out his normal day. He has a routine that he's engaging in. Depending on the stage, the routine itself will change. There will be a little icon in the corner that shows like an image showing what he's like being engaging in or wanting to do. So, for example, you might see an apple pie above his head in the lower left corner. That indicates that he is going to the kitchen to get some apple pie. You're supposed to use that to indicate or give you an idea of where he's going to go and how he's traversing through the house so that you can avoid him. Because if he sees you, he beats the crap out of you and you lose a life. You lose all three lives, you lose the stage. But what you're trying to do while you're in his house is you're trying to do everything possible to make his life hell. So, for example, the idea is generally that you'll go from room to room, exploring the rooms and finding, like, you know, like, say, for example, checking like a clothing drawer to see what's inside. It might be a book on torture or, yeah, because that is actually in the game, or a bowling ball in a bowling bag or some, you know, some toilet paper in the bathroom. And then you take those objects and locate places within the house which you can use to kind of like interact with them to set up a booby trap a la Spy versus Spy. The neighbor comes across the trap, he springs it, he gets hurt or he gets annoyed and he freaks out and his rage meter goes up. If you cap the rage meter, you get bonus points because over time that rage meter will go down. But if you're able to string along a series of different, you know, aggressions so that the rage meter keeps peaking, he will continue to get angry until he bursts. And every full outburst gets you more points on your final stage score. Every level has a set number of pranks you can pull that are intended to be pulled on stage. If you can pull them all, you'll get like all the medals that are awarded there and like a bonus, a point bonus for doing so. But you don't have to find every prank. You can just like stop at a certain one. It's like maybe 4 out of 7. If you can pull off those 4 and then walk out of the house, you'll still count as beating the stage. There are 3 like sets of stages you can engage in, and you get to each set of stages by getting a certain number of medals on the previous set of stages. So that's incentive for you to get as many as possible, so you can actually unlock the next sets of areas. The weird thing about this game, however, is that it's not difficult, like, at all. Like, it gets more complicated as his wife gets involved and the environments get a little bit more elaborate. But for the most part, oh, and also once the family dog gets into play, because once the dog arrives, you have to sneak around the dog, because if he barks loud enough after he sees you, he'll alert the neighbor, and the neighbor will go running around the house trying to find who the intruder is. And you got to find yourself hiding in, like, cabinets or under the bed or whatever. But, the thing about the game, though, is that it's not very difficult. It's mostly a game of trial and error. It's you saying, okay, I'm in the house. Here's a scenario. It's almost like they give you a puzzle and you just want to solve it. What are the pranks in this level? What can I do to prank him? And if you're familiar with games like Deception, the other element of this becomes, what's the best way to string pranks together one after another to just keep this guy angry? Which to me was probably the most fun element of the game. I liked finding out what the traps were on the stage and then trying to string them together as best as possible to just get the max score on it. It wasn't really important to get a max score aside from personal enjoyment, but that's what I wanted. I like doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, achievement hunters should be happy to know all you have to do is pretty much beat the game to get all the achievements in this. So there's no crazy hidden collectibles or weird shit like that. It's just beat everything.
Yeah, and honestly, that I'm actually kind of glad about that in the general sense. So like, it's already enough just to try to figure out all the different combinations to get the guy pissed off. I wouldn't want to deal with, okay, while you're also here, look for his loose tooth in the basement. Who cares? But the thing about the game that I enjoyed, though, for the most part, was just actually triggering the different traps and watching the neighbor get angry about them. Like a nice, simple bit of stupid, like, you know, early PC fun. Though I heard this game came out in 2003, it still feels like it came out in the late 90s, honestly. Because this is a remake of a game from 2003.
Tell because, like, when the cutscenes pop up, you could see how low quality those are. By the way, one of my big gripes with this game, the cutscenes are ungodly loud. Did you notice that?
I honestly didn't. But then again, my hearing is shit. So that's probably it.
Like, I lowered the volume down in the game, and then I started it, and the cutscene was still like max volume, and it, oh my lord, it was so loud. And then no D-pad controls in the menus. Like, come on, that is simple thing.
That's a basic thing you should be able to do. But on the positive, at least you don't spend a lot of time in the menu. You're basically going resume, restart because you pissed yourself off by breaking your combo or something like that.
Well, overall, $15 on it. What do you think?
I honestly think if you're okay with the idea of just like trial and error slapstick humor, I would actually give this a buy. Like, it's not meant to be a big excursion or anything like that. It's not meant to be the most, you know, fulfilling. You're not going to come away from this game going, oh man, this is the, I feel like I experienced one of the best games of my life. But you can come away going, you know, I had a couple laughs. I made this really jerky neighbor get really pissed off, and I had a good time doing it. You know, and that's good. So,
and it's cheaper than trying to actually import Neighbors from Hell for original Xbox or PS2 or something. I don't think it ever released in America. I'm pretty sure that's just a European only one.
Oh, all the more reason to give it a solid shot.
All right, next game to talk about is called Grood, developed by CC Arts, published by Dragius Games. It released October 23rd on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $4.99. Travel through woods, swamps, cities, frozen lands, deserts, and more to seek and destroy strange mechanical foes. There's no time to rest, and the sun will set before the battle is over. Be ready to fight nights and days and under different weather conditions like rain, snow, and strong winds. It will get hardcore, and the heavy metal soundtrack will keep you alert and adrenaline rushed. Cole, tell us about Grood.
So, you know how I really dislike games that are hard for the sake of being hard?
Yeah.
Grood is hard for the sake of being hard. I will say, I have a bit of a tolerance level when it comes to shmups being hard. I love shmups. I really do. I don't know why I can tolerate them being a little harder, but I can. That said, I was not content to see that when you start the game and you choose your difficulty, your options are hard, hard, or hard.
Yeah, that was kind of a slap in the face.
It was.
And I hate that.
When you remember that I prefer difficulty options because of accessibility issues, it's a little bit more insult to injury. I get that they were trying to be humorous, but in my case, that just doesn't land. Now, as far as actual gameplay, it's shmup and it's hard. And that's the long and short of it, honestly. You have a Gatling gun on your little ship, side-scrolling, shooting shit out of the air. Some of the enemy ships have just a disgusting amount of health. That's where your biggest difficulty comes from in the game. Even though it's hard, it's not like you can't do it. But I will often run into taking hits the most when I'm going against the ships with higher health, just because there's not enough power-ups or options to let you improve your guns early enough to make it reasonable to deal with them, and they shoot homing missiles at you. So it's a bit of a pain in the ass. I'm spoiled. I like to see shmups with a lot of different power-ups and being able to get really high combos and just clearing out everything and having an insane bullet spray. And Grood does not allow for any of that because it's relishing in that fuck you, this is hard mentality that it's got going for it. It was one of those, it was so frustrating because I wanted to love it more and I still liked it, but I wanted to love it more and it just was doing everything it could to stop me. Like, you know how like when a little kid wants to give their big brother a hug, but the big brother puts their hand on your forehead and won't let you near him? That's how I felt trying to love Grood. I'm like, let me love you. And it's like, nah, but this is hard. I'm just like, fuck!
It would be nice to see them put, like, actual more approachable difficulties in the game, but given that it's only a $5 game, I'm not sure if it would be worth it to actually probably, go back and do that.
Probably asking too much. Yeah. I would, and like I said, I would maybe some kind of more viable power-ups or something to give you a little more oomph with taking down some of those bigger ships. The other thing is that I was really impressed at how many hits your little ship could handle. Although everything goes so fucking fast that you can't see the health bar on the side anyway. And every time I died, I was like, well, I didn't see that coming. Although there are other external cues that give you an idea that you're getting fucked up and they make a hard game harder. Because your screen will get a crack in it when you're getting really close to dead. Your screen will get a crack and things get desaturated color wise. And there have been so many times where I have just been like a breath away from a med pack and died for no good damn reason. Just like, fuck off. The harder part of that still is that you can't even continue your game until you get to level 4 to unlock the ability to continue. So if you beat level 1 and then you die in level 2, fuck you. You're back at number 1. Yep. You beat level 3 and then you die right, like before it's done, fuck you. You're back at level one.
Yeah, that's mean.
Why? What is the point of it? I don't understand. Let people enjoy the game rather than putting everything behind a difficulty wall.
No.
Other than that, look, it's $5 from up. It looks great, plays great. It's just, fuck, it's annoyingly hard.
Well, your official verdict?
Can I go with the try it on the grounds of I think it's great for super hardcore shmup fans, but even like more moderate shmup fans like me are probably going to be put off by it.
That works.
And if you have any kind of disability that makes playing a game hard, you're just SOL.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Cross Crush, developed by Thin Ice Games, published by Rattle Lake Games and Grab the Games, released October 20th on PS4, 21st on Xbox One, 23rd on the Switch for $4.99. Henry and Florence are a happily married couple. They enjoy music and having been dancing all their lives, but now a noisy road has been built right in front of their home and they can't even have a dance night without traffic noises creeping through their most beloved songs. So they decide to take matters in their own hands and set to clear the road forever. Chris, tell us about Cross Crush.
Oh, Cross Crush. By our favorite publisher, by the way.
Yes, we love Dragius.
Yeah, and Dragius. Oh, is it Dragius? Oh, no.
This is Radalika. Grood was Dragius.
Yeah, this is Radalika.
I got thrown off because Ian Dragius has crazy sales in chat.
Joe, get out of my pills. They do, though.
Root beer's throwing me off. So, yeah, this is from Radalika and Grab the Games.
Yes, which I don't remember who Grab the Games did, though, but I remember I liked them, too. Anyways, okay, so Cross Crush is a game where you play either an elderly lady or man. And by the way, you can pick three skin tones. I love it. So you don't have to, you don't just have to be white. And basically your job. Okay, so it's essentially a puzzle game. So you've got this road that's been built in front of your house and you have to run along it. And there are cars coming and you have to try and just utterly destroy them. And if they're regular cars, you basically destroy them by placing or highlighting a grid. Like, so the road is divided in, like, of course, it's got the lanes, which are your vertical lines, and then your horizontal lines are interspersed throughout. And you highlight one of the squares, and when a car drives over it, if you then activate the square that you've highlighted, it will blow up that car. Now, of course, it wouldn't just be that simple. So you have this like line of, you know, you get to see this line of cars that are coming at you persistently, like basically one turn at a time, or like they move one block at a time. And there's a few different kinds. So there's the standard vehicles that you can just blow up. They either take up one block or two blocks. The two blocks are like buses and stuff. Then there are TNT trucks, which, for some reason, this highway is like the TNT line, you know? It's like there's a TNT truck in like every traffic cluster. So if you blow up that one, it will also blow up every vehicle adjacent to it, you know, by one. And then there's a white vehicle that I don't know what it is. It's just a vehicle that is white instead of like gray or red. And when you blow that one up, it creates a 3x3 grid of highlighted, you know, road tiles that at that point you can then explode once, you know, at any point, you know, basically before you highlight another spot in the road. So you can blow up like up to 9 cars at that point. Now, here's where it gets tricky. There is a specific kind of car, which is an ambulance, and all the ambulances are in an emergency. There's no non-emergency ambulance in this game. And by the way, you can tell this game was not developed in the U.S. because it's like these bright yellow ambulances, which they have those in other countries. Anyways, so if you blow up an ambulance, of course, it so not only does it knock 100 points off your score, it will cause all the other vehicles to instantly, like, you know, race to the crosswalk, which is the kind of like the Tetris line. You know, you don't go past that or else it's not game over, really. It's just round over and you lose points for every vehicle that makes it across. You're trying to destroy all of them, of course. And so the key is to try and destroy everything but the ambulances, let them go through. And then if you destroy the vehicle that is in front of an ambulance, the ambulance will then race towards the goal. So you can easily, like not easily, it depends on the level, but you can clear like the ambulances out of the cluster without, you know, there's ways to get rid of them without actually exploding them. And so that's the main thrust of the gameplay. It's 10 stages per level, and then it's like 10 levels, I think.
You want to know what this game is?
What?
This is goddamn Intelligent Cube from the PS1.
Oh, is it?
Hell yeah. I've
never played Intelligent
Cube. You never played Intelligent Cube? Well, now you've played Intelligent Cube.
If I beat Intelligent Cube then, because I beat this game.
If anyone is wondering what the game plays like, it is very much like Intelligent Cube on the PlayStation 1.
Well, no wonder it's good then. People really love Intelligent Cube.
Yeah, it was pretty badass when I fired this game up and I was like, oh my god, someone ripped off IQ. That is awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, well, that's the gameplay then. So what they've done is like they've wrapped this up in a nice little package with a lovely jazz soundtrack. The soundtrack is like old school sounding jazz in a few different subgenres of jazz, but I'm not a musical expert enough to really identify them. Let me just say each and every song in this game is a banger. It's good stuff. The other thing is that occasionally, okay, so one thing that I love about this game is that instead of just setting tiles and exploding vehicles, you could just, you know, go ham on them with your cane. Just push the, you know, the requisite button and, you know, granny or grandpa will actually just thwack the car. And it takes a long time to destroy a car with your cane. It's not exactly an effective weapon. It's just something you can do. However, occasionally, especially in the later levels, a vehicle will have a power up sitting on top of it. So if you hit that vehicle, if it's an ambulance or something, and you know, with your cane, then it will knock the power up off and then you can pick up the power up. And they range in from like a laser that lets you then, when you swing your cane, it shoots this lightning bolt in one, you know, all the way down a lane and destroying everything in its path. There's also one that turns your octogenarian into a giant who gets to then slowly just, you know, walk over cars like a kaiju, and it's amazing. Not super effective, but super fun. And yeah, past that, it's just like you can take damage if a car like moves into the spot you're on while you're still on it. Of course, you get run over, and there's difficulty modes that make the cars faster, and they make them to where if you get hit once by a car, then you die, like in real life, instead of getting hit like 8 or 9 times and then getting right back up. Which is, you know, how real life should be.
Yeah.
But
well, overall, $5 on this one. What do you think of it?
Yeah, it's a great little Rattalaika game. I mean, if obviously for fans of Intelligent Cube, it's a must-have.
Hell yes.
I love the soundtrack. I love that they didn't lock you into just one race, as it were. Like, you actually do get to play as, like, different people with different colored skin. And yeah, there's just nothing to dislike about this, really. I played through all the levels, and you know, it ramps up in difficulty in a way that's like, that's satisfying. It never gets too hard, but you know, there's always like, you always feel like, oh, I could have done that better, and you know, then that makes you want to do so. Yeah. So yeah, it's a good one. Buy it.
Awesome. All right. Next game to talk about is Assault on Metaltron, developed by Storm Trident and Blue Sunset Games, published by Forever Entertainment, released October 21st on Xbox One for $6.99. Metaltron, an energy-rich metallic planet, has been invaded by combined forces of humans and orc hordes. Now you must defend your metallic planet from human and orc invaders in this intense, challenging, and fun action tower defense game. Rennell, tell us about Assault on Metaltron.
Assault on Metaltron is a tower defense game. At its core, it's about as basic as it gets, or not basic in a bad way, but I mean, like, it's what you'd expect from a tower defense game. Ships will land onto the field. There will be a visible path in which the enemies which will leave the ship will progress from the ship to the crystal cores at the other end of the path, where they will smash them up, thereby ending your game if 20 units manage to get to the other side. However, along that path that they are all traversing, there are these mechanical, or whatever they are, tree-looking things. And those are stations that can be used to build one of 13 different turret or items. What do you mean by items? Well, there's some things that don't work as turrets, so like kind of like supplementary things. There are guns of a basic variety where they're just like, you know, firearms. There are elemental guns that are good against enemies who are not resistant to elemental attacks, but they're more resistant to regular attacks. And then there are the items such as like gold, things that increase gold production on kills, things that make enemies more valuable in general, things of that nature. The idea of the game is that enemies of different types will come off the ship. There might be walking enemies, flying enemies, elemental resistant enemies, or physical resistant enemies. And your job is to build the right armaments in the right areas of the path to the crystals to defeat them all before they destroy your core. Now, the added gimmick to this, aside from the norm, is the fact that each turret can be upgraded up to 5 times. And those 5 upgrades can be a combination of attack upgrades, range upgrades, or frequency of fire, i.e. cooldown upgrades. And while you can typically pay for them, which again can be money can be earned by defeating enemies or starting waves early, the other way to upgrade them is by dancing. Your robot, when idling in front of a tower, can do one of 3 different dances to slowly build up a gauge, upon a completion will upgrade a tower for free. So it's not broken because that gauge moves very slowly and there is no way to speed it up. So it's pretty much just a thing you can do to strategically make use of your idle time, since your robot can't actually fight. Like, you know, in some games you can actually attack alongside your towers. Honestly, though, I found the game to be fun to play. The music gets to be a bit repetitive because it only changes like every 10 or so stages, but it's good music. In fact, I can still tell you that the first track, I got to get that on my show at some point. That damn thing is a banger. Like, I don't know who wrote it, but they are a gem. But the music in the game is really good. So despite it being repetitive, I was okay with listening to it for the entire set of stages. I was totally fine with it. The game has an award for getting a perfect rating on a level, which you can do by getting through an entire set of waves. And by set, I mean like completing the stage without any of your crystals being destroyed. So you're ultimately going to be going back to levels you've already completed and trying to find the perfect build to have enemies be unable to damage your crystal core. That in itself makes it kind of a puzzle game, because on one hand, you could just kind of scrimp through and just like pull it off, which honestly, it's not particularly easy. This game does get pretty freaking hard. But there's also something to be said about going back to levels and, okay, I beat the level, had 2 crystals left over, but let's see about getting that perfect, which means you got to solve the conundrum of what's the perfect build in order of which to build said perfect build. So while I won't go so far as to say that this is like one of the top, you know, like tower defense games, even on the Switch for that matter, or for the Xbox, or any of those things. Clearly, you can talk a Switch on the monks. I love my damn Switch. I can say that I still very much enjoyed my play of the game. If you like tower defense games and you're okay with a bit of repetition in your environments and music, because again, environment and tune only change every 10 stages, I still think the game is a solid time. Just don't come in here expecting it to be like, you know, one of the big wigs, but do come in expecting it to be a tower defense game if you're looking for a good tower defense game to spend your time on.
Well, then $7
to that music.
$7 for your dance.
$7 to dance and buy it. Buy it. It's a good time.
Good stuff. All right, one final game to talk about tonight. We got some DLC for the game Azure Lane Crosswave, developed by Felestella, Idea Factory, and Compile Heart, published by Idea Factory International. The DLC released October 5th on Steam for $7.99 per character. Each DLC includes 1 main playable character, 3 new support ships, and additional story mode content for the character. We got 5 of them to talk about. Chris, any specific order that you want to tackle these in, or what do you want to do?
I have notes.
Okay.
We can totally. Yeah, this is one of the very few reviews where I actually have like a sheet.
Nice. To go by. So take it away.
Okay, so briefly, for those who don't know Azure Crosswaves, Azure Lane Crosswaves, it is a an unusual shooter. It is basically an RPG where the battle sequences are done in a third-person shooting mode, like kind of like an all-range mode Star Fox type of thing, where you lock onto enemies and shoot at them and things like that. All of your vehicles are sexy anime waifus who are also battleships.
Makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. And in order to play this DLC, I actually committed a lot of time to actually beating the game so that I could see how the DLC kind of ties into it. I didn't have to do that, but I sacrificed much for this podcast.
You thought you had to do it.
Yeah. Well, actually, it turns out that it is best to, because a lot of the DLC here, they basically... So what it is in general, and this is true for all five stories, is that it introduces a new player character, which you can also play in the main game. Because even though the storyline follows like certain characters, like when you actually get into a battle, it's kind of like Suikoden or something like that. It's like you can pick any three player characters to be your actual main line. And then, of course, the support ships just kind of add little bonuses to things and certain moves. Sometimes they'll occasionally heal your party members or something like that, shoot down planes, whatever. They're not as important, but every character in this game that has a name, and that is a lot of characters, either appears as a player character or a support ship. So each of the stories introduces a new player character, of course, and three support ships, and the story is all about those. Inevitably, it becomes about five characters per story, and you go basically into a special map that's these chapters start at 7, which the final chapter of the game is 6, so they are meant to be continuations of the story, and indeed, the events of the main quest are referred to usually vaguely, without any real spoilers, but the big bad guys in the main quest are... also generally the bad guys in these DLCs as well. So it actually is kind of best if you do know what happened. And the length of content of story, it's kind of a one or two season anime. And these are little additional 3-episode arcs just following one character that's not in the main anime, but still takes place in that world. That's kind of how to think about these. And so that's you're kind of getting five mini games of this type. And so, yeah, one by one, starting from chapter 7, this deals with Taiho, who is, of course, the different characters all come from these different countries that are, they're vaguely actual, U.S., military superpowers. And so Taiho is from the kind of Japan equivalent, which is the one I picked for the main story. So I'm very familiar with it now. It's the Sakura Kingdom. And what her ship type is an aircraft carrier. So all of her attacks are basically sending airplanes to do big damage to the enemy, but without attacking them directly, which ties perfectly into her personality because she's extremely lazy as a character. She's a bit of an airhead. She's one of my favorites, actually. And I really like her. I like her story. It sort of reveals that this one country that is occasionally referred to, but, not really a major part of the main quest, is an entire country that's also a movie set. So they're always making movies. I guess it's Hollywood, but it's also France. So whatever. And it's about her going over there to, to do things, basically be in a film or investigate a certain thing. The story is always a couple of mistranslations away from being perfectly told. So, and, like I said, in all these, you have lots and lots of little story event sequences where the characters talk to each other and you just get to kind of be immersed in this sort of visual novel style world, which is very typical of Idea Factory Compile Heart games. And then it's broken up by battles, and the battles start really easily, but because there's, I think in this DLC there was 6 battles or so, and the first one's really easy, but the second one, my level 90 characters couldn't get all of the achievements, and then by the end, it was actually a tougher boss than the final boss of the main quest. So, you know, they ramp up the difficulty in each fight, like, considerably. But if you play through the main quest, you should be able to handle it. And then, of course, in this story, there's also a couple of characters that are also DLC characters that kind of appear like a little bit of a cameo. So I like how they're kind of selling you the other DLC characters through kind of putting them into the, you know, each DLC.
Cross story. Promotion.
Yeah, cross promotion. Exactly. So yeah, Taiho is great. I really like her. Oh, by the way, her like actual appearance is, it's like the Sakura, like it's very Japanese, you know, kimono and stuff. But like the back of her is like this giant folding fan for some reason. And, yeah, I don't know. It's really cool looking though.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like, yeah, they all have like really interesting, like the way that they tie the battleship aspects into the character design is great. Like this, the art design in this is great, even though it's like super fan servicey. It's still like, I still am like, these costumes are actually really incredible though. Anyways, so the second one is Formidable. She is from the Royal Navy, which is the British, kind of, you know, prim and proper sort of aspect of things. She is a sister of two of the other main story characters, which is very typical of characters in this game. A lot of the main characters will have like sisters that are also support characters. And I should, if I haven't mentioned before, every single character without exception in this game is female. It is only women. And in that sense, as fan servicey as the game is, like every single conversation passes the Bechdel test. So
nice,
you know, hashtag feminism. the only male here is the gaze, G-A-Z-E.
Oh God.
Anyways. Oof. Yeah. I came up with that joke earlier today and I was like, I need to throw that in there. Oh, so boy. Formidable is a little bit of a space cadet, a little bit of a gothic French maid, I guess. But she has this ribbon that's tied around her, and the back of the ribbon is like four aircraft carriers. It's amazing. Now, as a character, as a player character, she is exactly identical to Taiho. They're both aircraft carrier types. They equip the same stuff. They have generally the same stats. So, you know, you could pick either one, and I don't think their stories even intersect, really. So, yeah, her story is basically about, and this is going to get confusing, it's about a few of the characters from the main quest and a couple of characters that are kind of exclusive to the whole DLC set, like they appear in more than one DLC, and they go to a royal ship. They go on board a royal ship that pilots itself. So these are ladies who are ships who carry airplanes that are riding around in a ship. And it kind of takes off on its own. And there's like this mystery about like why the ship's doing this and like all this stuff. And, you know, spoilers, turns out it's the bad guys. Anyways.
No.
So that's her story. And it's pretty cute. I like her too. I like space cadet anime girls. Like, I think they're pretty fun. One of my favorite characters in one of my favorite animes is definitely the Space Cadet. So, and then that takes us to Rune. Now, Rune is from the Iron Blood Kingdom. That's the Germany equivalent. And these are like really weapons obsessed folks. And they're like really into like this kind of clinical style of like studying war and all this stuff. And, you know, they're still like different personality types. They're not all like uptight and like slightly evil, but most of them are uptight and slightly evil. And so Rune stands out because she's like this just gentle, soft-hearted person who's always offering people a hug and all this other stuff. Like she's like very much like this kind of moral center of all of her groups that are, you know, varying levels of either evil or just kind of timid. Timid, they're like not like hesitant to be evil, let's say. But she'll have none of it. She's not evil at all. And she is my favorite player character because her story is kind of like about how she goes through these classes, makes friends and all this stuff. And the difference between the Iron Blood Consen, whatever, I don't know, whatever, the ship ladies. The difference between them and the other countries is that their rigs, which is the battleship part of their, you know, costumes, are actually alive. And like, they're these like mechanical bio, like monsters essentially. And Runes is like this really cool, it looks like a scorpion, but instead of the tail of the scorpion, that's a dragon's head.
Interesting. So,
yeah, but it's all like still mechanical and still looks like it's made of ships. It is by far like my favorite like looking machinery in the game. And yeah, she is a, I think she's like a heavy destroyer or something like that. She's like a more straightforward fighter, and her rig just like, and the weapons that she can equip, like she absolutely kicks ass. So it's kind of this fun contrast between her being like, basically this really, really gentle person, but with this like rig that's alive and like is really mean to everybody. So that's kind of like what her thing is. And of course that also ties into a story with the bad guys, which are sirens and not at all guys. They're ladies and who are occasionally kind of like octopuses.
Nice. So who else?
Okay. So then we have Lamalin. And she's got a really cute story, too. So she's like a little like, you know, she's more on the cute moe side of things, like rather than like straight up, you know, sexy waifu, whatever. And she's really identical to the main character of the main game, Shimekaze. But like, yeah, her story is all about like, you know, she's like trying to be cool and all this stuff and trying to be like a detective in this thing. She's from the Vikia region, which is the French movie set like type thing that's going on. And so like her thing's kind of like a little bit of a mystery. She's also working with people from the Iron Blood story. So there's characters from Rune's story that tie into this one as well. And then she like goes off and like, it's confusing as to why this happens, but she goes off to this whole other area to do like the kind of training exercises that are a major theme in the main quest. And then she meets Centaur, who is a, you know, like one of those, like she's immediately like, starstruck by, you know, Lamalin's like kind of, arrogant, like her arrogant display, like this very innocent girl, like just kind of falls all into it. And it's really amusing because like, she thinks she's a badass and like, she's all the time internally, like, you know, doubting herself kind of thing. I don't know. Anyway, but the thing about Centaur is that she has a bow that is made of boats. So again,
okay.
Super great. Yeah, it's easier to see than to describe, but yeah, she's got this bow and it looks like it's made of two boats, and yeah, it's way cool. I love this game. So the final bit is Sirius, who is also from the Royal Navy, the British equivalent. Also looks like a sexy maid, like formidable. And she's very like obsequious and servant-like and like awkward. She's very serious. And basically, yeah. And she is like rather going to, along with another character that becomes a backup ship, going to Sakura and, you know, basically going to collect cubes. And then the bad guys appear and they're like, we're going to do something bad. We're going to, you know, take the PT cube, which is the MacGuffin that kind of drives the main story. So you like have this amount of like time to prepare for this battle. And so it's kind of like all about bringing these characters together to kind of like go for that, you know, final push towards who knows what. Yeah. And it's
gasp.
All centered around this, this very like, you know, this real, a real powerhouse with low self-esteem kind of person. So yeah, great stories. Of course, like I said, battle sequences that will start off easy, but then will eventually, you know, like, damn, like the, so to get all of the, trophies in a battle, you have to complete it under 3 minutes to get an S rank. Sorry, 2 minutes. And the final boss battle just of Taiho's DLC took me 24 minutes.
So, jeez.
Yeah, there's a lot going here. And yeah, all the DLC is great because they also give you like really good end game items, because again, it's assumed that you've probably beaten the game at this point or are very close. And, yeah, it's great to get in there and collect them. like I said, the writing is really interesting. Like, the characters really stand out. I love each and every one of their designs. And, yeah, you can take them into the main quest, too. So that's really cool, too.
Cool. So $8 a character. What do you think?
Well, that's $40 total to get all of them on top of a game that's already full price. So, you know, I'm a big fan of Compile Heart and Idea Factory. If I would have, like, if these weren't up for review, I probably would have bought them all myself because they are actually all really good. It's definitely, like I said, it's like if you really liked the two seasons of an anime that you got, you know, the 26 episode, you know, main story, and you just want a little bit more. Each one of these is great, and they all have an ending, so you don't have to just, you don't have to commit to getting all of them. I recommend all of them. I think they're all good buy-ins for fans of this this game and of Idea Factory in general. I think you should start in the order that they appear, which is Taiho, Formidable, Rune, Lamallon, and then Sirius, because they do kind of, even though they don't directly refer to each other very much, it makes more sense if you play them in that order. So, yeah, I like
it. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. We made it through another long one.
Yeah.
We were going to be under 2 hours, and then Chris is like, I'm going to go 20 minutes on this DLC.
Well, Chris, I literally spent 13 hours playing it, so.
Chris took longer reviewing a DLC than I took reviewing a pack with 5 games in it.
Yeah. Proud of you, Chris.
Hey, I'm not knocking it. Chris's flow is on fire.
Oh, thank you.
Gets the content out.
Yeah,
well, but, I'm going to bed.
Well, we still have to end the show. Thanks to all of you for being here, hanging out. Thanks to Tim for coming on, doing his thing earlier as well. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Well, Cole's going to bed, so I don't even know. Cole is in bed. There it is.